Hello, 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 and welcome to the 10-Minute Basketball Podcast. I am your host, Stefan. Thank you so much for checking us out. I have a very, very special episode for you guys today. I was able to get together with my buddies, Russell and Corey, over Zoom, and we talked about episodes 7 and 8 of The Last Dance. It was a wonderful conversation. It went quite long, so it definitely is more than 10 minutes, but check it out here.
I'm just interested in your guys' thoughts so far on the series. What have you thought of it?
I've really enjoyed it. I think part of it's just withdrawal from sports. So to see something that's new-ish has been really great, mm-hmm. especially as someone who was born the same year MJ won his first title. So it's not like I really remember much of anything about his career.
Yeah.
Aside from I had a Horace Grant and BJ Armstrong action figure from, I think, like Burger King or something, from a Happy Meal.
That's
or
hilarious.
Whatever the Burger King equivalent is. And, you know, watching Space Jam and things like that. I didn't really know anything about MJ until I finally started paying attention to the NBA. And that was after he was retired mm-hmm. for the second time. So it's been fun to kind of see new footage and see how great he is, frankly. I mean, you watch some of the, like, Go Fly With Me or some of the early VHS tapes that they put out, and you can kind of tell, but to have the interviews spliced in with footage and the jumping back and forth between different eras is nuts. I mean, 63 points in the playoffs. Come on. It's insane.
Yeah, I agree. The way that they're doing it, where they're jumping from like one era back to the beginning era and kind of just giving you a juxtaposition of the two eras is really cool. And I agree too. You know, I was born a little earlier than you, but
Just dunk the ball, bro. Come on, you're right
dunk,
there.
He's already right there.
Yeah, it's interesting. As someone who got a degree in history for my undergraduate degree, like what they teach us is that like everything's connected, right? And so watching this documentary is interesting because they kind of do a lot of those flashbacks and flash forwards, which I was a little bit surprised about, because when they pitched this documentary or like advertised to the world, it was like, oh, this is about the 98 season. And I feel like we haven't really seen a whole lot of the 98 season. It seems like we're seeing like this is almost a documentary kind of over Michael's whole entire life. And that's been really interesting because Megan, my wife, sits down and watches this with me. And she honestly, as someone who doesn't watch a lot of basketball, has been so confused. Like literally every episode, she's like, wait, like I thought Phil Jackson, this was his last year. Why is he still coaching? You know, because of just the constant flashback and flash forward. And so I think it's for people who maybe don't know or haven't really kind of lived through the 90s, like, and aren't a basketball fan, it can be kind of hard to follow it because they're not really understanding everything that's going on. But for those of us who are basketball fans and kind of understand the history and the context, I feel like this has been really great because you do get to see like, oh, let's go back and look at the 92 Dream Team. Oh, let's look back at 84 when he got drafted. You know, oh, let's like talk to his mom and like see what his rookie year was like, you know, all this sort of stuff. And then like flash forward and it's like, okay, yeah, he's like, this is 98, his last year. He's not playing for anyone else, that sort of thing. So I wonder if, like, you know, maybe your wives have watched it with you and if they've had any comments about, you know, the series.
That's the thing. I think it's only because of the jumping back and forth that it has broad applicability. Like, I would have watched it if it was just the footage from 97, 98, right? You know,
yeah.
Uncut. Let's just see the footage. Like, don't give me any narration. Don't, whatever. I want to see the practice footage. I want to see the scrimmages. I want to see the, you know, in the locker room talk, all that kind of stuff. But I think it's helped my wife, Ellen, who has become a basketball fan sort of since we were dating and now married. But it really helps her kind of ground, like, all right, who was Michael Jordan? Oh, here's his mom. Oh, he was writing letters to her at UNC. Oh, he was a rookie and scoring all these points. And oh, look how young he is. Oh, you know, like that type of thing. And I think it's been really effective in that way to kind of expand the story to those who don't know the early days. Like, you know, as a basketball fans, kind of all know this stuff, you know. I've been a little surprised that people haven't been as up to speed on some of the major events of MJ's career. And they're like, oh my gosh. You know, like I mentioned the Boston Garden 63 points, but I think we all knew about that beforehand, right? If you're paying attention. But it's been cool to see people who aren't basketball fans be able to get invested in this and also watch with people who would be watching one way or another. So that's been fun.
Russ, has Kristen been watching this with you?
She has been, but not as intently as I would have hoped. So I think what I've realized from this is that sports just kind of speaks to me and maybe people who just, I mean, I grew up playing basketball, so maybe that's part of it. Like, I understand not quite the work ethic, but, you know, going to practice early in the morning and having to put in the hours to try to get your jump shot right. Yeah. And it's just, Kristen's totally not been into it. She just doesn't, she can't relate. It's hard. Yeah. I think it was episode eight where Jordan is talking about, like, you know, hey man, you know, the way you acted, you might've been looked at it like as a bad guy, you know, not like a good teammate. And then they go into this montage of just different portions of his career, showing him in the weight room and how hard he had to work. And, you know, he's like, he got choked up when he's talking about, look, I never asked anyone to do anything I wasn't doing myself. I was like, oh man, like it hit me. I got goosebumps. Like literally, like I'm getting goosebumps now. Like my Zoom video isn't very good, but I got goosebumps just thinking about that. And I was like, oh, like Chris, did you catch that? Like I rewound it and like watched it again. And she's like, okay, yeah, I get it. But like, what's the significance? I mean, and I was like, that is the significance. Like, this is great. Like, this is so awesome. Like, this guy just worked so hard. And like, I don't know. Cause for me, I guess being a Laker fan, like I saw that in Kobe. So it's like, oh, okay, that puts Kobe into context too. Like, where did Kobe get it from? Like, he just touched so many, you know, players going forward. And they even talked about this in earlier episodes where, you know, he was joking, like, when I was in the locker room, like, they're having a cigarette at halftime, you know? Like,
yeah,
it was just a whole different game. So I think he bred a new generation of guys who were, you know, really honing their craft, really, like, you know, trying to perfect every inch of their game. And it reminded me of like a documentary I watched, Jiro Dreams of Sushi. You guys ever watched that? Like, whoever thought sushi could be so intense, right? Like, just the way the fish just, like, you know, he explains how he, you know, where they get the fish, why they get the fish. And, you know, he can almost estimate like how many grains of rice he does because he's done it over and over and over and over and like practiced every aspect of it. And just, it reminds me of that. It's just honing a single craft.
Yeah. Like Rodman with the rebounding. That was exactly. maybe the most interesting comment of the entire time, where he was talking about Magic doesn't have spin on his shot, so it bounces off this way, whereas Larry has spin on, you know, spin, so it's going to come off this way. And it was interesting to see that be celebrated in someone else, and then obviously, like you're saying, Russ get taken to the nth degree with Jordan. So
So what do you, I mean, we all obviously were alive in the 97-98 season, regardless of whether we remember it a lot. I remember it, but it's one of those things where I was at an age where I was alive and I remember watching it, but the significance of it hit me like a couple years later when I started actually like playing competitive basketball and like reading a lot of books about Michael. And so it's like one of those things where it's like in the moment, it's like, okay, yeah, we're watching a basketball game. But then like 3 years later, it's like, oh, that was like the basketball game to watch, you know? So I'm wondering like what you guys remember about this time, about like the Bulls, Michael Jordan, like what do you remember about the 98 season, if anything?
I honestly don't remember much. Mm-hmm. Again, I mean, I was like a little bit too young. I really started watching professional sports the next year.
Yeah.
But my dad was a basketball coach. You know, I was in the gym all the time as a little kid. And I remember all of his players liking the Bulls. And then I also remember my dad being amazed by Jordan's talent, but just kind of not particularly interested in the type of game he played, because he had loved watching like the Lakers fast break, and earlier, like with the Warriors with Rick Barry running, just running, 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 and just to slow it down with the triangle. And obviously that was the offense that worked for them, and it was a good call, a good job, Phil Jackson. But it's not like he was a big Bulls fan by any means, so it wasn't really something we were watching too much at home, though I'm sure I sat and watched some games as a 8-year-old, 7-year-old, whatever it was at the time. Yeah. But yeah, like you, Stefan, it was more afterwards. I'm like, oh, this guy was the greatest. Okay, maybe I should go watch his highlights.
Yeah.
I think what I remember the most from that is in the finals when I think it was game 6, Jordan's crossing over Brian Russell, hitting that shot, the game winner.
Yeah.
It's arguable. Push off, not push off. Good crossover. I mean,
it's a mess. It's a massive offensive foul. Massive push off.
Not during the
probably
during the 90s, they're not calling that as a push off. Today, that's like that's an like double technical thrown out of the game.
I remember practicing that though, like in basketball practice with my friends. Like, oh, do you guys see that? Okay, let's practice that crossover. And then it like turned into N1 mixtape, and you know, like totally like carrying the ball over. But yeah, I don't know. That's what I remember the most from the 98 finals.
Yeah, I remember. I mean, I remember it, like, because I remember, like, the Bulls were so big. I mean, I grew up in Illinois, like 2.5 hours south of Chicago. The Bulls are the only basketball team that we have, really. The only professional team we have. Like, we have a couple of college teams that are, like, at that time were, like, decent. But, I mean, I remember kids I went to school with, because I went to, like, a private Christian school, and so we had some kids that were, like, really wealthy, and, like, there's kids at Jordans, and I remember begging my mom I wanted a pair of the Jordans that he released in the 98 season. And I remember, like, during the summers, probably from, like, 95 on, we had television, but we didn't have cable. And so we'd go to the library and rent VHSs, and one of the couple VHSs they had was, like, the 93, like, season wrap-up, you know, VHS for the Bulls. And then, like, every year after that they got the one. So I remember watching those, because it's like there's only so many videos that we could rent. And so I remember watching those. So I actually remember it, and like the Bulls were like obviously such a huge deal, you know, being in Illinois. But it's crazy now that I'm like older and like care more about basketball, like how much I recognize how good Michael Jordan was, you know. And it's like You see like the dunks and you're like, okay, like that's cool when you're a kid. But when you start to understand like how an offense is supposed to run, and like how, you know, excuse me, the defense is going to counter when you do this and that sort of thing, you kind of like see like the chess match of it. You realize like, oh my gosh, he is so much better than I thought. Like I'm recognizing his greatness. So I don't know. I just had to say that because it's been, I feel like this documentary has helped maybe a lot of people realize like how good Michael Jordan was, and like, he retired because he was bored. Like, I think, I don't know. That's what's like strikes me the most about this, is that like when they show it, like obviously, you know, he kind of has license. Michael Jordan has license to kind of, and the filmmakers obviously kind of have license to kind of tell the story in a way that they want. Obviously that's going to make Michael look the best, as best as it can. I mean, that's what's going to sell obviously. But like, it's interesting how like that has come up, you know, where he's just like, I have nothing left in the game, you know? And I don't really see very many basketball players these days being able to say that, because like there is no one has achieved the level that Michael has, you know? So
I think they made it like a pretty convincing argument for why, you know, I mean, everyone knows about the conspiracy theories, right? You know, that Stern actually, you know, was suspending him for 18 months and this and that because of the gambling probe. And I think what this documentary did, though, is made a pretty convincing argument that he left because he was bored. He had no more, not so much that he was bored, he was burnt out, and he really didn't see a challenge on the horizon. And he's the type of guy where he needs the challenge, right? Like, they made a very convincing argument that he needs something to push him, whether it's a player talking trash to him on the sideline or on the court, or if he's just having to tell himself, like, hey, that guy said this, even though the guy didn't say it, just to motivate himself, right? And he just was just running out of motivation. And the media, I think the media attention that he was, the negative media attention that he was drawing was starting to outweigh the challenge that he was seeing. And then, you know, his dad dies and then he needs a new challenge. He needs something to take, he has such a competitive drive that he needs to take his mind off of, you know, the thing in front of him to go pursue something else to kind of like feed that that competitiveness he needs. So I thought they made a pretty convincing argument that Stern actually didn't suspend him, but was actually, you know, he just needed something. He needed something to motivate him.
But he had that quarters game, man, against his security guards. He had the quarters game, and he had golf.
That was so funny.
Yeah, I think it's really interesting because that's totally right, Russ. Like, he does just seem bored, and he had surpassed Magic, and he had surpassed Bird by winning 3 in a row. He's looking at his competition, and aside from Barkley, like, who really is there left at that point? I guess Patrick Ewing, who always kind of underperformed when it mattered most, and then Gary Payton later, and Karl Malone, but Karl Malone choked all the time, and so it was just like, I don't know. I mean, I've listened to some podcasts where they're talking to, I think it was Bill Simmons, where he's talking about he didn't have a guy. You know, he didn't have a rival, partly because he just destroyed all his potential rivals. Like, they talk about Clyde Drexler being compared to him. It's like, no, that's wrong. Like, and he took offense, obviously, and just went after him. But yeah, I mean, you look at LeBron these days, and he's had people all along the way to challenge him. And maybe that shows that he's not as good, because he couldn't surmount those challenges. But I do think the league's a lot deeper now than it was at the end of the Bulls run, because it was really diluted. Like, that Jazz team, aside from Stockton and Malone, they weren't very good. And honestly, the Bulls weren't that good. You know, like, Steve Kerr wouldn't play in today's NBA.
Yeah.
He wouldn't play. He's too slow. He's too strong.
Yeah. It's a different game, though.
It was. That's totally fair. But it's just like, you look at their third guy, because obviously Scottie would be great in today's NBA, and obviously Jordan would be the best player. But other than that, man, it was pretty weak at the time. I don't know. But then at his second retirement, right, there's no team for him to go to, because for all Jerry Krause's issues, he kind of called his bluff. You know, Jerry's like, I want to rebuild. Okay. And frankly, it would be celebrated by NBA Twitter for that now if it wasn't Michael Jordan. Where was Michael going to go afterwards? Mm-hmm. He would have to take a massive pay cut to go play on someone else's team, because no one hoarded their cap space like they do now. And so, yeah.
I don't know if he would have been celebrated on NBA Twitter for, like, I don't know if there's ever been a team who literally, like, won a championship in any sport and then decided, like, let's blow it up. You know, like, these guys are getting.
What about the Mavs? 2011 Mavs. Trade away Tyson Chandler, trade away everyone. Yeah.
You know? They were also very, very old. I mean, if you're gonna tell me Dirk was gonna mount another, like, impressive season, like.
So are the Bulls, though. Because imagine this. Let's say Jordan doesn't retire, they bring Phil back. It's not like they're gonna sign Scottie to some big deal.
Yeah.
Right. And so then it's just MJ and no one. And they still would have been good because he's amazing. Yeah. But
yeah. And I mean, obviously, like, the 99 was a shortened season anyway. So, like, do I have a feeling that MJ and the Bulls minus Scottie could have made a run? Like, I think so, you know, because it's a shortened season. Like, I mean, MJ's kinda like Tom Brady. He can get more out of less, you know? It was just like they probably shouldn't have given Michael a $30 million deal when the cap space was like $40 million or whatever. Like, that's insane. If I, like, the 98 bad fiscal management, if you will. I mean, he obviously deserved the contract, but just hilarious that back then, like, you know, they're like, oh, we're going to pay you $30.1 million. And that's more than, like, the next, like, five people combined. Like, just insane. Last question. I mean, we can keep talking as long as this Zoom link goes for, but what I was really interested in is, as current NBA fans, like, we watch this documentary through the lens, obviously, that Michael Jordan is the best player to ever play. Whether you agree with that or not is, you know, is semi up for debate on this podcast. But does it change how you view any current NBA player, Kobe Bryant included, RIP, we'll miss you, Bean. But I'm wondering if it does. I have some thoughts, but I'll let you guys speak first.
I mean, one major point that I think has been made very clear in the documentary is just what a spectacle the Bulls were, especially at the end. I mean, my pastor up in LA talks about, because he's a former basketball player, he, you know, huge basketball fan, tries to weave basketball into his sermons every time. Shout out Reality LA and Jeremy Treat, good stuff from back in the day. But he would talk about how as a kid, they were desperate to get tickets when the Bulls came to town. He lived in Seattle. Like, it was just the hottest ticket in town. It was everything you wanted. You'd go for an hour, 2 hours beforehand just to catch a glimpse of Michael, because it was that much of a circus, a spectacle, et cetera. Frankly, LeBron has never had that. And I think that's one of the big distinguishing factors. Michael was just so much better than everyone else at his time. And maybe it was diluted, and frankly, it was at the end, but he was just so good that it was an event when he came to town. And I think a better comp is the Warriors and Steph, you know, like people just seeing his talent and being astounded by it, something they've never seen before, flocking out to just see him warm up. It's really interesting to have that comp. And I'm wondering if that's why LeBron can't stand Steph, because he got the attention more on the MJ level than LeBron has, because who's been just amazing his entire career. It's like less incredible to watch just because, hey, here's this 6'10 guy who you would build to be the greatest basketball player ever. And he's maximized his talents. I don't know. There's just something about the hoopla around the Warriors, not this year, but in the past. And then you compare that to the Bulls. It's, I don't know. It seems more of a comparison than, I don't know, the Heat when LeBron was on the team.
I think also, like, because the league was a little bit more diluted and the talent level was, it was more top heavy back then, you know, that's why he got a little bit more of the, or there was a more of like, you know, it was such a spectacle when Jordan came to town. I mean, okay, so I'm looking at the 1997-98 NBA All-Stars, and if we go down the list, it's like Chris Gatling, Tom Gugliotta, Eddie Jones, Karl Malone, Shaq, Mitch Richmond, Detlef Schrempf, Latrell Sprewell. And then if we go C-Webb, Glenn Rice. I mean, Glenn Rice, come on. Dikembe Mutombo, Alonzo Mourning, Christian Laettner, Joe Dumars, Terrell Brandon, Vin Baker. I think the league right now, there's so much talent in the league. And if you look at the All-Stars from, like, this era, there's so many spectacles to – I mean, without even looking at the All-Star, I mean, when the Greek Freak comes to town, that's a spectacle. When Steph comes to town, that's a spectacle. When AD comes to town, or now he's in my town, that's a spectacle. There's just so much talent, Harden. There's so many talented spectacle, air quotes, players that it's just, it's such a different league. And really the NBA, you know, is embracing that and really, you know, making commercials and really trying to tout their stars. There's so many stars in the NBA. It's a really fun time to be an NBA fan, I feel like. Every game, there's a spectacle.
And thank you so much for tuning in, and we'll see you all next week.